DM from Cookeville.
Sitting in a workshop somewhere over there, having no idea what was really going on, just here participating. And he came up and sat down next to me, and we started talking. And I knew from that minute, that second, that I was around my people. And the only way I get to be around my people is I've got to show up. I got to be here. And, man, without further ado, come on, D.
Yeah. I'm D. I'm an addict. So, I didn't do that for y'all. That's prayer. And it's, see, I work at Action Program. And so I have needed to humble myself in the hopes that God can do something through me and I won't get in the fucking way because I'm really good at that. But today, I'm filled with gratitude. This is my first convention, I guess, 4 years ago. My clean date is 7/28/21. So I have 4.5 years. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. I'm going to talk a little bit about how the end of the road was for me, but more importantly, I want y'all to know at the end of the road, love showed up for me. Okay? And that's very important in my story. And it's very important for me to remember. And it's very important for me to attempt to work on paying back that debt of gratitude that I had to this program and have to this program this very day. Because this has shown me for the first time in my life how to live. I didn't ever know how to do that. I really was trying to die for a long period of time. And we'll touch on that a little bit. So I'm D from Tennessee. When I say that, that's really true. I was born in Memphis, Tennessee. Lived there till about the age of 4 and decided my family needed to move to East Tennessee. No, you know, I was 4, fuck. So my dad moved us as a family to East Tennessee. I don't remember that shit. I remember vaguely a small memory when I was small. I don't know what age of my grandfather, but that was down in Mississippi. And, you know, growing up in East Tennessee, Greenville, Tennessee, I felt out of place at a very early age, but and I always was trying to figure that out. I was a middle child, the only boy. Had a lot of cousins. I had an older sister, younger sister. My dad was rarely around. My mom had 4 sisters, and they all had fucking daughters. I had like an older cousin who was a guy, so I was always surrounded by women. And felt out of place in that aspect. You know, when we were doing shit, I didn't want to fucking play with dolls. Like, fuck. You know, maybe I did sometimes, but anyway. Just trying to fit in. No, but I ran off in the woods a lot. I ran a lot in my life. But in the woods, I could be where the fuck I wanted to be. You know, I loved climbing trees. You know, anytime anyone talks about, like I heard other people talk about seeing somebody in a tree, and I'm like, well, where the fuck else was he supposed to be? Because when I was a kid, man, I loved that. I loved the adventures. I was Robin Hood. I was, you know, whatever I wanted to be. I remember when Star Wars came out, and I'd get tree, you know, sticks were one of the fucking best toys ever created. And I mean, I loved finding a stick. As soon as I walked out of the door and started heading, I was looking for the stick. You know, that magic little toy that I would play with. But it was real. It wasn't a fucking toy. Don't fuck around with me. I got a stick. You know? And I carried that with me. I always needed something to make me feel complete, though. And I never could feel complete. But in the fantasy world, I felt that. I felt a little bit more connection with the lives that I lived. And apparently, the rest of society just wondered, what the fuck's wrong with you? You know? And so we'll get into that. In my life, my road, you know, I always think it's interesting when people talk about bottoms. You know, finding your bottom. I found my fucking bottom many fucking times. I heard someone talk about trap doors. I would bust through my fucking bottom time after time after time. And it went like that for my entire life. I was an active addiction. Active means I was engaged in it. My addiction manifested way before 12, but by 12, I was an active addiction. And it wasn't until I did a thorough fourth step, and I often notice that, you know, my reality, my truth changes. The more work I put in, the more my understanding of what went on. Thank you so much. Didn't know I'd get caught in the mouth. Hadn't had that in a while. Just saying. Thank God for that. This is a different kind, too. So, anyway, active addiction from age 12 to 47. I'm 54 now. And, you know, really, I guess it went up until 50. Yeah. Now, from age 12 to 47, the longest period of time that I could put together without using something to change the way I feel was around 60 days. It's a long, fucking dedicated life of addiction, isn't it? That's a lot of work. I've done a lot of time in jails and institutions. I've been in about every county jail from Knoxville to Bristol, Tennessee. I've been in Orleans Parish Prison. What a lovely fucking place that was. Did 8 years in Northeast, time in Morgan County. I flattened 11 29s in my county. Done 3 years day for day in county one time because they wouldn't ship me to prison less than 4 years. You know, those are just some of the consequences. And when I landed in those places, there were many times where I was fucking cool with it because I knew I could get in there. I knew how it worked. Not only that, I looking back on it, I felt safer there. You know, I could see who's coming in there. I knew what cell you were in. And that's a horrible fucking way to live. And if you had told me I was running in fear, I would have fucked you up. But that was what I was doing. And that's probably why I would have fucked you up. Or I would have gotten fucked up. I mean, I am full of scar tissue and injuries. I still have a bone sticking out of my arm, as you can see, where I fixed myself after breaking my arm in 17 places. That didn't work out too well. It's really starting to hurt really bad when I write, you know. But it's not like the pain I put myself through. And it turns out to get surgery to get any of the things done. Because, see, I actually go and talk to medical professionals today. And I'm a medical miracle. That's what they keep telling me. They're like, I do not know how your health. I mean, I look healthy, but I'm very healthy compared to the way I was when I got here. Now, when I got here to the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous treatment, that wasn't the first time. I started this journey in 2018. But I'll just give you an example. I had a little story that's laid in my heart that I don't want to fucking tell you, so I'm going to tell you. And like Josiah said, I said, I know I got to tell something embarrassing. He goes, as long as it's not about your dick. I'm like, well, it sort of is. So here we go. The last few years of my active addiction, I had three different times where I'd overdosed and was in a coma. And coming out of coma in ICU, I was never happy about it. You know, the thing about it, I was never happy that I was still alive. And I was homeless. Did I mention that for about the last 15, 20 years? Because, see, yeah, I'm finally at that fucking point to realize that if I wasn't paying rent, I was homeless. Because a lot of times I was like, man, I wasn't homeless except in the last fucking about 7 years. Now, just because when I got out of jail and I could go to mama's house didn't mean I had a fucking home. Then when they wouldn't let me come there anymore, even though there were many years where they had laid down the law, but when they woke up some mornings and I was living in their pool house and they were scared to ask me to leave. I didn't know that then. I just thought, well, they love me. I get to stay here whenever I want. We're family. And, you know, I had a lot of trauma in my childhood. I don't need to really get into all that because if you're an addict, addiction equals trauma. For me, this is my experience. It wasn't until I started working the steps and coming to understanding of my pain that I could start to get an understanding of how we can get in the solution. And that is where love showed up, like I said. But going back to the second, I think it was the second OD, that one was intentional. And that's a long story of surviving that. There's no logical explanation. You know, I heard hope with a track record is faith, and I came in here with faith because there was a lot of evidence that a power greater than myself was keeping me alive. I thought it was a curse. I was wrong. Thank God. So I came out of this coma. I had a lot of injuries too. I always had a lot of injuries, and they were trying to treat me, and they were giving me some stuff on a drip. And they were like, "Well, we're going to take you off of this." And I was like, "Well, I don't like that shit anyway. I get the fuck out of here." And so I walked out of ICU in John C. Medical Center in a hospital gown. You know, got some of those little hospital flops and a catheter in. I was going to go back to Greenville. It's about, I don't know, 24 miles away. So I started walking, you know. Went out a side door, got down. I got on the elevator, someone said something to me. But I apparently don't come across as a very much a person you want to fucking talk to when I'm in an insane state. Most of the time, people just be like, "Get the fuck am I here?" So I left the hospital and started walking. And I start walking and start heading down toward Jonesboro on the interstate, trying to, you know, put the thumb out. And I'm like, "Well, nobody fucking stopped for me." Driving by, well, I had a bag that kept filling up with blood. I had to dump that out, keep walking. And my ass was showing. You know, I wore 14s. Those hospital shoes were really little, so they'd broken off. And I'm like, "Arr!" Walking. It starts raining on me. "Dude, you hate me." I walked all the way to Jonesboro barefoot in a hospital gown with a catheter in. I stopped at this gas station. I remember trying to cross the street and cars, you know, I'm like, "Why don't they stop, you know, because you're insane. That's not how that works." I got over to the gas station and this woman, I asked people, but they just wouldn't talk to me, you know, and I was like, "Well, fuck, maybe the cops will show up and put me in jail because I ain't walking all the way back to the hospital." And then someone asked me, I guess I looked like I knew, like, "Hey, you know where to get some drugs?" I'm like, "Yeah, give me a ride." So they gave me some money, you know, to buy them drugs. I just was like, "God, I got free money and a ride." And they got to drive me to a trap house. These two women who were together, and they were, you know, friends of mine. I'd do business with them, which meant I would stay there sometimes and use and protect them from people coming to rob them while I robbed them, you know. And when I showed up, they would let me in. There were a lot of places that wouldn't. Some places they'd just throw drugs out the window. That's a real story. There were two places that when I showed up, they would throw drugs out to go away. And I'd go up in the bushes and hang out and watch and until I was out and go back and go, "Ooh." So I have this catheter in, I get a ride, and the guy's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." You know? And that guy, now he's insane. Picking me up, that guy was crazy. So I get to this trap house, you know, I go inside with his money, and I'm like, "Hey," and they're like, "What is going on? Where's that going to?" And I'm like, "Right here." And so I sit down, and they give me some clothes from some dude who died, you know. And I wore dead men's clothes a lot. That was a thing I thought, you know, when I was locked up and knew someone had died, I'm going straight to their house, pick over their old lady, and get free clothes, you know. That's a really crazy thought today. But so I hung out using for 5, maybe 6 days. And, you know, that dehydrates you too. So then they're like, "You're getting sick. You're not going to fucking die here. We're taking you to the hospital. And you got to get that thing out." So I go into the hospital. And I'm like, "Man, I'll probably have to wait a while." They sort of rush you in there when they're like, you know, "What is going on?" And so after you do a lot of amphetamine, not drink anything for days, it's sort of hard for them to get that catheter out. Well, that's one of the most embarrassing, painful places you can fucking be, especially when the nurse is good looking. No, really, it's not me. So when they removed that, you know, I just came out of a coma, walked off without taking, and they offered me treatment, they offered me help, and that's the story of my life. People have been offering to help me in ways, in different, every single way you can imagine. My father was a doctor, and I was actually, I went to college pre-med when I was 17. I graduated high school early and went off to LSU, go Tigers. Fuck, I remember that school. It wasn't the school, it was me. I know it's hard to believe. But, you know, there are all these things that I've been given in life, like life itself, gifts. You know, I've been really amazingly healthy with all the things I've done to myself. It's just mind-boggling. When I got here, I was really sick. But in 2018 was the first time I got out of a coma. And took, you know, was offered, or that was, yeah, it's 2018, because it was just a few months before that one, like six months later, here I go again. You know, that one I didn't mean to, just mixing some stuff up and doing it, and apparently it almost killed me, because I didn't care. You know, I had lost feelings, I lost hope, I lost the will to live. I had a lot of willpower, though. You know, I didn't know that. I thought when I got here, I didn't have any willpower. No, man. I would walk, like, a long ways to get what I needed. I would run. I would hide. I would think of ways and means to get more and follow through. But that's about all I could do. Everything else, I couldn't even figure out how to. I mean, I was a dirty person, man, on a constant basis. I hear people talk about not taking showers, and I'm like, oh, yeah, why the fuck would you? That takes effort, you know, and that means, who are you doing that for? I don't care about myself. But 2018, that time, I actually completed my first 30-day treatment. Straight from there, they sent me to this place in East Tennessee, and I went and I stayed. I didn't want to, but I did. When I got out, I was about to get out, like, they'd, you know, when they sit down and talk about exit plan, where do you need to go and all that, I'm like, I'm good. You know, and I was like, I'm just going back out on the streets. And then about the day before, I got really scared. Something happened when I rested for a little while. A little spark in me was like, maybe you shouldn't die. So I went to a sober living. You know, it is up middle, it's up outside Knoxville in Maryville. The thing that happened there was, one night I hung out with this dude because he didn't want this other guy to die. And this guy was a member of Narcotics Anonymous. He sat with him, instead of kicking him out of this house, and talked to him and asked me to sit with him. And I listened because I didn't have shit to say. I was like, what the fuck are we doing this? I want to go and watch TV or something. I haven't watched TV in a while. Y'all got TV in there. But by sitting with him, I heard this message. Now, I didn't do much except for fuck up my heart that moment. I didn't know what was going on. It felt really weird. I didn't know what this guy was doing. I thought, it was weird. I had a thought like, this dude's weak. But my heart was like, this dude's amazing. So I started going to meetings. You know, well, the main reason I went to meetings was, I mean, at the time I thought, yeah, I was going to meetings. Now you got to get your paper signed. And I wanted them to think I was doing great. You know, and also I could get cigarettes and manipulate people there. And like when they got out to go get an energy drink, give me two, I'll get you tomorrow. I always get energy drinks and I always get cigarettes. And I had mine and my money in my pockets, like, ooh, boy, what's up? You know, and then I could go and talked to the girls, which I still wasn't. I lost interest in that because I didn't know how to do it. You know, I didn't know how to talk to other people, so I watched. And I go to meetings, and I did that for months. And then some girl back home, I start feeling better. This, well, actually, my first love called me and hit me up on Messenger on Facebook, you know, because I didn't have a number. And it's like, hey, you're doing great, because I'm posting that shit on Facebook. Look at me. I'm doing great. And it's also the judge's ex-wife, so I moved back to Greenville. I was in jail shortly after that. apparently had a violation, and COVID had hit, and I thought, well, hell, I'll just go in and do a 2-for-1, knock this out. And they're doing 3-for-1. I'll just take first violation in a few days. See, I started to think again, but still back to the same way of thinking. And then it ended up as in front of the judge, you know, her ex-husband. So he gave me a year. So flatten that. How about that? So I started using it in there, you know. I was already using it on the street. It's like all the times looking back that I thought I had some clean time until I sat down and did some work and then sat down and did some work and then sat down and did some work. And throughout that whole process, work on my understanding of my relationship with God, things started to change. You know, we had these steps. Early on, this is something I heard was steps will teach me how to live myself. Traditions will teach me how to live with the rest of the world. And the concepts I learned a few years later as I got more in depth with service will teach me how to properly be of service to others. And I've come to believe that because there's spiritual principles throughout all those things. I did want to talk a little bit about the message I would really like to deliver today. And if you want to know what it is, I think they stated better in the spiritual principle of the day. Willing to walk in faith. All right? I have faith in this program. I have faith in all of you. I probably have more faith in you than you have in yourself if you're a newcomer. See, I know that there's an opportunity for a new way to live. If it worked for me, it works for anybody. But see, there's that word work. This program is freely given to us. But it was up to me to do the work, and it continues to this day. In this, it talks about I have a full, rich life in recovery. Damn right I do. I told you, I came in here. So when I was in jail, they said, is anybody interested in the last 28 days in rehab? I was like, hell no. Oh, yeah, I do. That was weird. But I ended up going. I went to a treatment center. And when I was there, I heard a guy, you know, H&I and all these things that we do to carry the message. Thank you, God, for that. Because that saved my life. I heard a fellow named Doug, who was in the program, who I love dearly. I talked to him last week. He's no longer in this program. He's taking a different path. But I talked to him, and that guy's always going to be somebody that it just chokes me up. And I'm going to be honest with you. I have fear for Doug. Because this program, and you all have shared your experience, and I hear often about different things, and I read the literature fervently. I learned some simple things in this program. When I came in and I stayed, it wasn't like I learned shit the first day, except how to show up. Man, what an important lesson for me. When NA calls, or the program calls, or I have a relationship with God now, when He calls, I serve. That service is serving me as well. It serves me in healing. It serves me in how to connect. Serves me on how to live. You know, these are the things I never knew how to do. The idea of service, when I first heard that word, it's like, I don't know what the hell y'all are going to be doing. I ain't doing that shit. But the thing is my first sponsor allowed me to walk through some shit on my own, but walked right by me. You know, I try to practice that lesson because it worked for me, but I do know that it also varies at different times for different individuals. That's another wonderful thing I think about this program. As I learned about, you know, our diversity is our strength, right? That means, and I hated this idea at first, that there's all these different people, but we can all do this thing called life together. And there's something in every single one of you for me. And I have something for every single one of you. And the common thing that I think is, you know, this is a program of love. This is a program that gives me the opportunity to learn how to love myself and love others. It's a program that I've learned through a relationship of learning to love my higher power to do that thing. I get to practice in a room of people just like me who know my pain and understand that where I come from is okay. I know that I have a darkness that lives within me. Ooh. I ain't fucking fixed. I don't know about y'all. Maybe y'all, or maybe someone got fixed. They got recovered. They don't have to come anymore. Good for you. I don't know. I don't know your experience. But I have fear because my disease creeps up on me all the time. I told, you know, a couple of people. I was told when I came in also that, you know, I didn't have to tell everybody. But I had to tell somebody. You know, because there are no statutes of limitations anymore, too. I'm just saying. But what I found in that is this, is when I did tell somebody, I became a lot more willing to tell other people too. I learned that my shame and my guilt are two things that are internal and external. You know, they have to deal with me and other people, and they're barriers to me connecting to you. Fear, there's a movie called Dune when I was a kid, the first one. And I remembered, I loved that movie. And there was this guy, Paul Atreides. And he said, fear is the mind killer. And even as a kid, I knew that to be a truth. You know, even though I didn't know anything about anything, for some reason, that was one of those truths that spread across the universe to me, and I understood it. And I get to hear those all the time in here when I keep showing up. I want to thank you guys. Those of you who stayed, you know, because I need you. I need you today. And I know life shows up and different things happen and we make choices. And I've learned from my experience, there's a lot of times where I want to go and do the bare fucking minimum. Yeah, and I can justify the fuck out of myself to do that. But you know what I do most of the time? I don't fucking do that. Because that's my thinking. And that's my disease thinking. Okay? And if I didn't mention, I spent a lifetime of justifying my actions. So I've abandoned children, I abused women, I abused myself. I was. I guess the state still labels me as a convicted violent felon with a history of violence. It's not how I live today. Wasn't that I made a choice one fucking day to go, you know what, I'm just going to stop hurting people. That takes work. But my sponsor told me when I came in, one of the first things that we do in Narcotics Anonymous is we don't hurt each other anymore. Man, that's really a powerful message. I about start crying just now. Because I still hurt people. But I know how to work on that. And I don't do it in the way that I used to. Operating in fear. You know, I make mistakes. I make new mistakes today. Sometimes I make old mistakes, but they aren't like the mistakes I used to make. And catching charges, not today at least. You know, not say I can't. This path that I've been given through this program requires me to do some work. I start my day. I've done one thing really well, I believe. I'm looking at Mason because, of course, I expect confirmation from my sponsor. I think I've been really consistent. Sorry, I got really choked out because I was never able to do that my entire life. I was never able to show up for my father when he was dying. I actually did. I ran off. I was sent by the state out to a year-long program, religious program down in southern Mississippi. I lasted 7 days. And I ran off. And I walked through the blizzard of Hattiesburg with two other dudes to get some dope, keep going, to get to a Greyhound station. Get back to Tennessee. And when I did that, I robbed an old lady. You know, I saw she had some pills on the bus. I stole her pills. Switched out different places. You know, then I sold some at a Greyhound. It's fucked up, y'all. I'm just saying. It is. I was like, well, I didn't know about this my whole life. God, I would have caught charges in all kinds of states. That's a horrible idea for me. But anyway, when I got back to Tennessee that time, they get that Wi-Fi on there, and I'd stolen someone's phone, and I'm sitting there like, hell yeah, man, hitting up my old buddy. He's picking me up at the gas station where they drop you off in Mossheim, Greene County, and I got off and did a shot in the neck. Said, run me by my dad's house. Go by. I go in, and, you know, I am crazy. He had been in hospice for 3 years. I got to see his drawn face, and I remember, I know I felt something, but I was so used to shutting it off, I couldn't feel something. And this is something that, you know, I've just been able to talk about in the past year, because when I looked at him, all I could fucking think about was, how much money is this motherfucker going to give me? Damn, I wish he'd die. And he said, I'm going to give you some money, son, because I know you're not going to stay. I love you. That's one of two times in my life I can remember calling my father up telling me he loved me. We didn't do that. I always wanted that. You know what? I always wanted that with my mother and my sisters and all that. I get that today with my mother and both of my sisters. One of my sisters is a criminal defense lawyer. The other runs a law firm. I'm the mediator between my fucking sisters today. 4.5 years clean. What the fuck? My mother calls me to talk to me. She's going through dementia. I'm the one that has the most conversation with her. My sister, my younger sister, does the most service for her. She lives right over from her. But as far as real conversations and listening, y'all taught me how to listen. I got a real thing. It used to be a bad thing when somebody was on a phone in a meeting. I felt anger. I feel more, I feel sad for people when I see that, because I know they're missing out on something. I heard that someone talking, yeah, you motherfucker. but it is. It's just the fact is that thing is just another thing that will stop me from connecting with you. Hold on. And I do this all the time. If no one's talked to me before, I'm a work in progress. I have a hard time. I know, oh, poor me, staying. But you know what? I fucking do it. I have a hard time staying in a conversation. I mean, JW's probably 100 conversations. I bet I'm the first one to leave every fucking time. It's work. Sometimes I stay longer. Sometimes I can't. When I say I can't. Because I'm giving it my best effort today. See what I'm saying? Saying at least I'm fucking doing something. I'm putting in the effort. Y'all taught me that. When I first came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous with my first sponsor, and I was living with a bunch of guys in recovery, they thought I was in my fucking books all the time. I was trying to read. I wasn't reading 20 fucking pages and memorizing that shit. I was trying to understand one fucking sentence. My brain was fucked up, y'all. You know, I had done some damage. But through work, spiritual work, mental exercises, physical too. I'm not doing too good at that right now, but whatever. We'll talk later about that one. But see, these are the things I'm willing to do. I'm willing to be vulnerable, transparent with y'all about the things that, you know what? I'm working on me. That's the important aspect. There's two lines I want to talk about in the basic text. One says, this is a program of learning. Fucking simple, right? Not so simple if I'm not willing to learn. You know, what does that look like? I didn't even understand what that looked like. Show the fuck up. Listen. Man, that can be a struggle for me at a meeting, but it's also today a great identifier for me to know where I am. See, I've worked all 12 steps and I continue working, but more importantly now is I'm practicing them in my life. When I can't hear you because something's going on with me. When I'm in a meeting, that happened last night. You motherfuckers told me I was speaking today and I missed half of what she was talking about last night. Because God was giving me all kinds of direction, but I was giving more direction to myself. But see, I'm glad I hit my knees before I got up here, because see, the second part is this is a program of action. What I did when I hit my knees was it's an act of humility. Okay? It's an act of humility. I've got to remind myself that I need God and I need all of you and I need this program. I came in here and I had a desire. Today I have a passion. Fucking doesn't just happen. I don't care. That's just me, my opinion. I got a lot of opinions on shit. But it's my opinion from my experience, but it's just what I know about myself. Maybe someone's different. Maybe y'all are, your experience is going to be different from mine. But there are commonalities. And I'm just hoping that maybe something I share that you can use. So I found that if I have a desire to stay clean, it takes action of me feeding into the desire for it to turn into a passion. Much like hope to faith. Hope with a track record becomes faith, correct? That's what some people say. Different things, different people's ideas. But it did for me. I had hope that maybe if y'all could stay clean, I could. I had faith when I did the shit and I got the results. When I have a desire, I have a desire all day long for a woman. If I'm going to talk to her, ain't nothing going to happen there, right? Same thing with this program. I can look at it from a distance all day long. I can be a tourist. I can go to meetings. But if I don't seek the solution in the steps, I ain't getting no fucking solution. There's a guy in our fellowship, Kermit O. A few years back, I heard this thing, and it's stuck with me ever since. See, I was at a convention. I was listening to what he said. He said, willingness without action is fantasy. That spoke to my soul. It helped me understand. I fantasized my whole fucking life. Today, I try to work a program. I try to live a program. If NA calls, I show up. If I'm asked, I say, God, come on, let's help me with this. Get me the fuck out of the way and allow my life to help someone else's. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love my life today. So being an addict who lived in addiction for such a long time, when I got here, I just want to give you a little hope shot. Okay? Just want to give you a little evidence that this program works. I mean, if it doesn't give you a little evidence that I'm standing up here telling you about pulling, getting a catheter removed after, you know, getting high for 7 days, whatever, that's pretty stupid. But the thing is that I'm married today. You know, I came in here, I didn't have anything. When I say I'm married to a woman outside of our program. That relationship was a gift from God. We actually just started into conversation about God. After a few months, you know, she asked me, why didn't you ever ask me out? I was like, yeah. So we went on a hike out in the middle of the woods. You know, because I like hiking. She's a very avid hiker, and we're on this hike out away from everything. And I'm like, this is where I need to be transparent and honest. And I'm like, back in 2008, I had 2 attempted murders and 4 aggravated assaults. And I'm not even looking at her. I'm sitting there looking at this waterfall going, God's home. You know, they talk about religious fervor. There's some weird shit going on with me then. And I, you know, I continued on a little bit more about abuse and hurting people and stuff. And I turned around and saw the most fake smile that was screaming like, what the fuck is going on? I should have called my sponsor with that idea. But what happened with that, now here's the catch. It sounds like a horrible idea, right? But it turned into something. Because see, the thing was, she wasn't used to a man being honest with her, it turned out. Broke into a conversation later on after she met some of my family. We dated for a while, and they were like telling her some stories, and she's like, holy shit, all that's true? She'll tell friends. I'm not boasting about myself because, see, I try to be honest with people, very transparent, because hell, I don't have a whole lot to hide. It's all on the fucking internet. And it was in papers. I was on the news a few times. Shit like that. People in my hometown, you know, it's just maybe one of those things that it's not time for me to go back. But hopefully one day I can go back and carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous to East Tennessee. You know, I've had some conversations with people. And the thing is that when I try to do that, that's on my timing, not God's. So I'm like, oh, I got to go give them some shit. And they're like, no, motherfucker, you just stay where you're at. Sounds like you're doing good. You know? We're just waiting. They are. They're just waiting. And that's cool too, man. Because if they wait long enough, maybe they'll see another miracle in my life. Maybe they'll see something else great that God's doing for me. And then they'll see in the background usually an NA symbol. I don't know, everybody's got their different beliefs. I don't put your information out there, but a lot of times when I go to events and things like that, and that's in the background, I'm cool with that. I ain't going, I'm a representative of Narcotics Anonymous. But I'll tell you what, we are not a secret fucking society. All right? I'm big on public relations. I love the idea of outreach. I love in the volunteer region right now, they have a program going on in outreach that's reaching out to incarcerated individuals. And there ain't a whole lot of motherfuckers getting on board. Just wanted y'all to know in case you don't know. Yeah, I am involved in service. It wasn't my idea. None of the things that fucking worked for me in my life were my idea. Honestly. Honestly. Now, the way I think has changed, and see, the reason I say that is because some of the ideas I get today, I don't think are mine. Because they're based in an entirely different spiritual realm, and they come from conversations. I call people all the time. And the thing is, I'm in a really good place with, when I call you, it's usually to talk to you about an idea that's not absolutely batshit crazy. That happens too, but not as much. That used to be the only thing I could do. You call and be like, hey, look, these people in the woods. So I will tell you a story about East Tennessee then. I don't know why the fuck this one hit on my heart. This is the kind of identification people had for me. I was known as a werewolf killer back in East Tennessee. There was a period of time where I was way out there. Living up in the mountains. Well, not living. I was staying in this dude's camper, you know, up on a spot where he had a shed. And we were doing some stuff there. And there's only a few of us. And I was security. I'd walk around with a sword or a battle axe. You know why? Because I was a felon. And I thought if I got caught with a gun, I might go to jail. Hey, this is real talk. I used to walk in the store and have like tomahawks on my belt loops because I didn't have a belt. I had like a twist tie pulling it together. And they'd just be like, you know, like they don't even see me. No, they just want you to get the fuck out of here. And they didn't call the cops either because it was a lot. I was a lot to deal with. But anyway, I was on this guy's property and he was weed eating. He'd stand down there, he'd stopped. I was doing my thing up in this camera, came out like, what's going on? Says, there's damn werewolves in the woods. I said, what? He goes, they keep coming up the fence line. I said, I got you. I ran out down to the shed. Dude's finishing up his work, and I get a sword off the wall. Because, you know, we kept battle axes and swords and other stuff. People trade for stuff. Anyway, I ran off in the woods. All I had on were some cut-off shorts, barefoot, and that. They just, I didn't come back. They're like, that dude is crazy, you know. So they went on around their business throughout the night and all that. The next morning, you know, of course, this guy's doing all this stuff on his grandfather's property off up on this mountainside. And the next day, the grandfather's up there bush hogging. He'd stopped and he's talking to this guy. This is me telling you what this guy sees. He says he's talking to his grandfather sitting up on the tractor. And there's some movement on the fence line back in the woods. He goes, and here comes D, walking out. He said, I couldn't tell what was wrong with him, but I knew something was. He had something over his shoulder, and he was naked. Apparently, I was covered in cow manure and blood with a short sword. And he just says, I get closer and closer, and he's going, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And I walk up, and his grandfather looks at me, and I go, I killed that damn werewolf. Throw it down. He's walking up into the trailer. That's the type of insanity I lived in.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, I laid down next to a cow pond, covered myself in shit, and killed a coyote. Lost my clothes in the woods. When they asked you to leave the property, and that place was a wreck anyway, and I couldn't even stay there. I'm protecting this place. Hell, I'm grateful, piece of it. Anyway, a lot has changed. You know, I remember, and the thing is, you know where I'd usually hear people tell that story was when I got back home in jail. Jail was never my home. I didn't have a home. People took care of me because I was a danger to myself and everybody else in this world. Today, I live a different way of life. I live with a love of Narcotics Anonymous in my heart. I seek guidance from a God of my understanding. Let me share a little bit on that. It's not what somebody else fucking told me about God. It's this relationship that I built with Him through the service I get to do, the people I build relationships with. God talks to me all the time through different people. And they're members of Narcotics Anonymous most of the time. I'm at a point now where I can hear a message from my higher power in all kinds of different ways. See, thank God for that 11th step. When I got to the 11th step, I'm getting chill bones right now, and I understood for the first time in my life what conscious contact meant. I am not, at this point, willing to give that up. I seek that in my life today. It's a just for day program. It doesn't fucking matter what I did yesterday. Not in that aspect. So I do this to the best of my ability, where my feet are at. And that's right here with you guys at Out of the Darkness. I love y'all.